After 32 years, I came out of the closet as a gay Christian pastor. Finally, on the outside of that suffocating prison, I'm looking around and I'm like, we can't stay here. It's not enough to become informed. We have to do something about the harm we're still witnessing within systems and spaces we've been loyal to for so long. It's time we become reformers. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Confessions of a Reformer. I'm your host, Mike Maiashiro, and we are doing the series, The Real Lives of Gay Men. I believe that's the title of this series. Anyway, we got a special guest today. I have Eric Ellis with us.
Morning.
Eric, hi.
Hello, hello.
Eric, why don't you just tell everyone, like, who are you in the world? What do you do?
I am an aging gay man in Nashville, Tennessee. I am professionally, I work in the world of business consulting. I have been someone who has gone from church every Sunday and Wednesday night with my family as a child to the other end of that spectrum as an adult and somewhere in between. So a journeyer.
Nice. Also an artist.
Yeah. I articulate my point of view about a lot of things through visual media. So
yeah,
I'm a creator, maker type person.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. So also just in terms of like understanding some of your background, you grew up
religion. Southern Baptist. Non-denominational, because the Southern Baptists were a little too liberal for us out in my neighborhood.
Nice. And was that like your whole family?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. The community we grew up in was mostly around my father's family. So our church, my church lineage in one small country church went back many, many decades. So my mom's family was not religious at all, actually, but yeah, we just with my dad's side of the family.
Right. Okay. So now I've met a lot of different gay people specifically who grew up in religious environments. Some of them, you know, fully immersed themselves and bought in and believed and participated. And some of them were like never really into it. Where would you fall on that spectrum of like, in terms of your own personal like beliefs and investment in that like religious structure?
It was my life. It was my life culturally before I understood it in any other level of depth. When I was very young, I was a very active child. And so I was the kid who on a Saturday morning, because I wanted to get out and do something, I would walk 2 or 3 miles to our neighborhood, putting Bible tracts in people's mailboxes. I was the one who was the president of our youth group, or I played piano in our church, or it's funny looking back on it as an adult, I was just an overactive child. And it just so happened that the religious church community of my small country town was the only outlet I had at the time. I think I would have been equally as active as if my parents had the money or interest in put me in gymnastics or something else like that. You know, there was a lot of pressure from my parents to be a Christian and to, you know, go to the altar and confess your sins and all that sort of stuff. But it was my life. I mean, it was my life all the way up. I went to a Christian university. I went to Liberty University for my undergrad. I then went to seminary, Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. But I only lasted there for 3 months, and that was when I quit and finally came out.
Nice. Okay, great. So that's all like really good background to know. So now I want to like ask specifically about your gay journey through that world and beyond, right? So my first question, I guess, at this point is, how did you first know you were gay?
I was thinking about this because I thought we might go here in the conversation, and I was trying to remember the first time that I was that I actually thought about it being, oh, I like boys. I was always interested in things that were more that our society would say were feminine or girls, like Barbie dolls growing up, or making clothes, or cheerleading, or music, playing the piano. Like there were, it was weird. I grew up with three brothers, and there was a set of rules for my brothers, and then there was a set of rules for me. And I was, in a weird sort of way, raised like a daughter. I had a different curfew than my brothers. I had a different, like, everything was different. And
wait, is that because of the age difference, or what was the reason?
No, I was number two of four. So there was one older and three younger. And it's because I was obedient. It's because I was quiet and soft. It was because I was not confrontational in that way. I was compliant. And I was interested in artistic things. Like, even when I was younger, I would fix my mom's hair and do her makeup when I was in middle school. I would decorate the house for Christmas. Like, I would, like, all of these things were naturally who I was. And I don't remember when I put a label on it and said, that's gay. I did have a very traumatic situation when I was very young. I knew that being sexual of sorts with another guy was not okay, because a neighbor kid and I did some experimenting when I was quite young, maybe sixth grade or so. And when my little brother found out about it, and he told my parents, and I have very clear memories of it was dark. It was probably late at night, 11 o'clock or so. I think my father had been working on the second shift and came home. And I remember getting drug out of my bed and brought into the kitchen and just being spanked within an inch of my life because of this whole thing my parents had found out about me being sexually experimenting with one of the neighbor boys. And so I clearly knew that something wasn't right. Like, that behavior wasn't the right behavior. But it was a long time. Well, not a long time. It was several years after that, maybe when I was in 9th or 10th grade, that I associated, oh, this is a gay thing. Like, oh, I see where this is, what this is.
Wow. So would you say, are you saying, it sounds like your discovery and realization of the term or label of gay around your life experience was traumatic, negative?
Well, so this was really interesting. I started having sexual interactions with guys at a very young age, and I had them on a regular basis. As I was very good at contriving situations where I somehow ended up in a, you know, and by sexual, I don't mean like sex. I mean just sort of like the foreplay stuff and this and that. But so much so, I became so comfortable with that when I finally fell in love for the first time in my early 20s, I had a really hard time attaching the emotions of love and connection with sex with an individual. And that was a lot of my early journey, and a lot of my therapy early on was not only dealing with growing up conservative evangelical, you're going to die and go to hell if you do this, but also, what does it mean? And is it okay to have emotions for another guy? Because that was something that I couldn't deal with. The whole sexual experience, I could have sex with somebody, get off, go feel bad about it and feel shameful about it for a few hours, and then move on the next day or a few hours later. But love is a whole new thing, a whole different thing. It hangs on to you. And it's something that you have to grapple with and come to terms with. And what do I think about this? What do I believe about this? And, well, that doesn't go with the rest of who I am. And there was just this constant clash against that. So that was truly the big struggle for me growing up as an adult gay man, was how to love another man, not how to have sex with him. How to have sex with him was the easy part.
Wow. Fascinating. Okay. So I would love to hear, you know, we only have so much time. So in the limited time that we have, I'd love to hear some of what that initial falling in love with someone was like. What was the context? Yeah, just whatever you felt like you'd want to share was pertinent to that part of your journey.
It's, well, interestingly enough, I moved to Boston in the late 90s. I went through an ex-gay conversion therapy program called White or stepping stones or white stones, one of the two. Anyway, after like 9 months of that, I was, you know, they were, I was a shining example of like how to do it right. Like, you're okay, you're straight, you're whatever. And of course I wasn't. And then I left the program. But shortly after that, I fell in love for the first time. And I think there were several things that contributed to that. I think for the first time in my life, I had stepped back and kind of looked at my life objectively in a way that maybe I hadn't before as it related to sexuality and relationships and things like that. About that time, I also stumbled across a book called Breaking Up or Breaking Through by this lesbian psychotherapist, Dina Batchelor Evans is her name. I don't know if she's still alive because she was quite old back then, but the book, I know the book is still around. And it was the first time that like her kind of theory, if you will, or whatever, is that we all have this little red wagon of life that we pull around with us, and we relate to other people through the experiences out of that little red wagon. And the difficulties or challenges that you have in loving another person come because of what's in my little red wagon doesn't necessarily align with your little red wagon. And if we don't know that they're there and we don't talk about it, then how are we ever going to have a successful relationship? And the other thing that she always said was that you can never, and I know this has become really cliche and popular because of RuPaul's Drag Race, but you can never love somebody else until you really learn to love who you are. And I think I learned to understand myself for the first time. And I understood what loving another individual meant and was about, because I had met someone and that happened. Gosh, that happened quite a few years, about 8 years after I came out, I guess. So this would have been in the early 2000s. Okay. There's two things. So I came out to myself in 92, and then I went back in the closet for a few years. And then I came out sort of again in the late 90s, and then to my family in the early 2000s.
Okay. Well, I have like 7 questions I want to ask you, so I'm going to make a choice. While we're here, I want to hear
that you could do this in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I know, right? That was setting all of us up for failure. What made you decide to go into conversion therapy? Was that like something you wanted? Was that something that was imposed on you?
Yeah, I didn't. I had a really hard time because of the way I grew up, being very conservative, because I went to a university that was a religious university. I had done missionary work in different places around the world. The gay world didn't suit me. I didn't like to drink. I wasn't doing drugs. At the time, I felt like I had to fall in love with everybody I had sex with. You know, this was sort of after my experience in high school. And then all of a sudden I thought, oh, well, I have to be, God would want me to be in love with somebody before I'd have sex with them. So I wasn't having lots of gratuitous sex and stuff. And I would go out with my friends and they would all just be like hammered and like drunk. And I thought, I didn't see any role models that I were particularly interested in following along behind or getting to know. And so I just was very disillusioned with what the gay world had to offer me. And that's really, I made the decision to go to conversion therapy by myself. You know, it was something that I was like, I'm just unhappy in this other world. Like, I don't want to do this. And yeah. It's interesting. For all of the things that conversion therapy was, all of the bad things, I tell a lot of it, like, I came out of conversion therapy a better gay person. I came out a more thoughtful individual. I came out on the other side understanding the impact of my religious background, my whole religious background and the impact it was having on my life socially. And it was, I really believe it was that gave me the strength to make it, to really at that point, just put a divide. And that was when I pushed religion and Christianity. I was like, okay, you don't work with where I'm going, so see you later. And I pushed it way in the background, and it gave me the strength to become who I now, you know, became, because I started seeing a therapist, and I actually explored lots of other things like Eastern meditation and Thich Nhat Hanh and like lots of different ways of thinking about identity and place and purpose in life. And a lot of other religious traditions that I had never even allowed myself to think about before that. And it made me a much more open, broad, who I am today a lot. And it, what I would have never done that had I not gone through that period of time after conversion therapy.
So just to make sure we're clear, or like catching what your experience was like, obviously there's some good stuff that came out of that experience. Was there negative stuff that came out of going through conversion therapy for you?
No, because it wasn't, they weren't telling me anything that I had not heard, you know, growing up. Like it was the whole, like, you just have to have faith. If you pray enough and you whip yourself up into emotional frenzy through worship and prayer, and then you'll have some sort of existential moment where the spirit, you know, touches you in a way that heals you and you can move forward. You know, once you come out of your emotional sort of moment with the spirit, then you can, you know, learn, figure out what that means to walk forward in strength and walk forward clean and pure. And it's just what I'd always known. Like they didn't tell me anything I didn't already know, but it was the workbooks that we went through. I would give anything if I could find my workbooks. I've moved so many times, they've been thrown away years ago, but we had to go through these workbooks where we had to write. It was the first time I'd actually wrote and journaled about about relationships with my parents, about relationships with my brothers, about like all sorts of different things. It was just a very thoughtful, it's kind of the first, my first psychotherapy experience, but just happened to be in a group format with a lot of worship and singing and stuff like that.
Totally. Okay. I have two big questions I want to ask you, and neither of them are on the schedule.
Oh gosh.
So feel free to know any of these questions.
Choose or choose not to answer them.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so my next question is, you mentioned something about there not being any role models in the gay community that you could look up to, and that you just didn't really feel like gay culture was this place that you wanted to belong to or could relate to. So that actually compelled you to go into conversion therapy yourself. I would be curious, like, can you speak to that whole concept of role models and the gay community? And, you know, it's like you went into that space kind of looking for something that wasn't available. Do you think that was unique to Eric, or is that something that you think all young men are looking for? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it depends so much on where you've come from. For me, growing up in a faith-based traditional household, and then your social circles are not from far from that, so your friend groups have the same vernacular. I've had this conversation with friends of mine from university before, because I think it's true, we experience a level of depth and a level of just realness about life that is so missing in the rest of society. Like, I found just the vapid surface level crap that I was getting from like the gay world that I was like, nobody wanted to talk about real things. Nobody wanted to talk about it was just like, I had been living in a world that was filled with like introspection and who am I in relationship with the divine, who am I in relationship with eternity, like, and I get it, you know, that's not for everybody, but I just didn't find that with the individuals that I was meeting in the gay world. So, you know, I didn't find those role models, but I think, you know, in reality, in retrospect, as I think about it, I also was looking for some freedom from all of that. So I remember this, there was a UCC church in Knoxville, Tennessee at the time. And it was the gay church in town. And everybody says like, you've got to go to this gay church. You know, there's like lesbian pastors and there's like gay men and relationships and there's people that are just like you, but they're different. And I went a few times and I just found it to be so like, so different and contrary to what I had grown up with in my evangelical background, that I thought, this is a bunch of hogwash. Like, y'all are just pretending. You just want to be a Christian so bad, and you just want to be gay so bad that you've created this weird thing that mashes all of it together. And none of it makes sense. And none of it is aligned with anything that, you know, at the time in my mind, I was like, none of this aligns with anything that the scriptures talks about. So why would you waste your time doing it? And I know that I can be very judgmental at times, but I think that's also the other reason that I pushed Christianity and the church so far away from me, was because it was clear in my mind at the time what the scriptures said about it. And I was clear in my head about who I was as a believer. And I was like, those two things don't go together. And I'm okay with that. It's like, you know, I have come a long way from this belief that if I stray from the path, I'm going to hell. I don't know that I believe that anymore, but I had to in some ways, because I couldn't be truly myself and I couldn't be truly that. It just felt like there was a compromise either way. So did I answer your question? I don't know if I did.
I literally don't remember my question anymore. Oh, I was asking about like wanting role models, and you were like, it's not necessarily inherent to all guys. You're like, it depends on what your original like phase of life was before all that, right?
Yeah, like, you know, it's funny you think about I think about myself as a young gay man. I wanted to see, you know, gay relationships that were gay men who had been together for a long time, who were heteronormative in the way that, you know, like they have this sort of normal life. They're just together. They just happen to be gay. But that's BS. Because even if I'd seen that, I would have probably judged it or said, so, you know, been something like, it would have probably been like, well, that's just fake. That's not real. You know, two gay men can't do that, because my mind hadn't changed yet about what I thought even gay people could be. And so maybe what I really was looking for back then was another gay man who was maybe a little conservative about their approach to being gay, but we're still gay, you know, that maybe didn't go to church every Sunday, but still felt like the sort of the pillars of what's important in life were similar to what mine were. Maybe that would have been the right role model for me. So I don't know. Like, who knows? I think, yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks. I'm scratching the other question because we won't have time for you to get into the depth of what that would entail. But I am curious for you, when you like think about just the journey you've been on and all the things that have changed in your mind from where you started to where you are now, what are some of the like big shifts that happened in your thinking, whether it was about you as an individual or you as a gay person or you in relation to Christianity or any of those things? I'm just curious, what were some of the big shifts for you that like when that changed, all of a sudden, you know, certain things clicked and other things were no longer like viable in your life?
I think the first time that I ever let myself question, really, really question whether God was real or whether the whole, you know, Jesus born in a manger, died on a cross, rose from the graves, whether that was even true or whether that was something I believe it anymore. It was a long time of, I would think of those things and I was like, I can never say that out loud. And then one time I remember saying sort of something, and it's kind of like one of those things where you're sort of like, am I going to get struck by lightning for saying that? I think that was foundational for me, of just really allowing myself to question the whole narrative. Like, is this even real? And then, yeah. No, I'm just looking at the time. I'm just being mindful of your editor.
Well, on that, would you say that you started asking those kind of intense fundamental questions because of your journey as a gay man?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know what the statistic is, but there's a statistic about the fact that people just don't change. You know, you become the version, a younger version of your parent who was a younger version of their parent who was a younger version of their parent. And unless there's an external force or there's something that really intercedes or intervenes, whether it's a marriage or whether it's a sexual orientation conversation or whether it's like whatever discovery that is that fundamentally shifts your foundation, people don't change. And I think it was the realization, the acceptance and the celebration of my being gay that I had to question everything then. Like I had to question it all. So.
Wow. Okay. And just for the sake of like people's curiosity as they're listening to you, and I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm going to ask it just because I think that's probably something that would come up as people are listening. Where does that leave you now? Where have you landed? What was the result of those questions in that journey?
I'm still on a journey, and I don't think it's anybody else's business. Like I don't it, and I'm not saying that to you, because you know me, I'll have a conversation about faith at any point in time, but I don't know if I believe it. I don't know what I believe. I look at evidence on a weekly basis a lot about in things that either happen in relationship or in the ether or the spirit or like whatever. Like I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. I haven't stopped thinking about it. So I guess that means.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I don't know if that's unique to you, Eric, but I mean, from my experience, you are somebody who's still hungry for information and knowledge and seeking to understand and still available and open.
Yeah.
I don't think that's, in my experience, that's not common. So I guess that your answer isn't surprising to me. Do you think that you'll ever land in a place where you feel like you know again, maybe like you used to know?
Maybe when I die.
Then you'll know. Oh God.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think people grasp onto religion for lots of reasons, and they grasp onto a relationship with the divine for lots of reasons. I'm lonely. Does that make me want to become part of a church community because I need friends? Or I'm looking for a partner. So do I then join a LGBT religious group because I'm looking for a partner with a certain type of quality? Or I'm looking for purpose in my work. So then do I start exploring what purpose means from a religious context? Like, I feel like there's lots of reasons that people engage with an exploration of the divine. And I think because a lot of my work, I do that very naturally, and I'm open to whatever I find. I haven't found a silver bullet yet.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
So
totally. Thank you. So listen, of course, there's so many more things you and I could talk about and more things I would love for you to get to share. This is just not the series for it. Perhaps we'll have to have another conversation down the road.
Lots of wine.
Right. But Eric, thank you.
Christians can drink, by the way.
Wait, say that again?
I said Christians can drink, by the way.
That's something you discovered along the way.
I've embraced.
Nice. Eric, thanks for being part of this series. Thanks for being who you are. Appreciate your candor and transparency. And I also want to just acknowledge for your sake and also for everyone listening, there was so much more to your journey and your story and the depth of who you are than we were able to get into today. And this is just, I guess, like a little teaser, right, of potentially some other conversations we could have down the road in my podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the questions you're asking to not just to me, but to society. You push in a way that I'm not comfortable doing. So thank you.
You're welcome. And as always, everyone, thanks for being here. Thank you for listening. Obviously, like, comment, share, rate, all the things. We love it. See you in the next episode. Listen, there's more where this came from. If you want to dive deeper, check out MikeMayaShiro.com.